Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Thank you for downloading this special edition of the podcast. This week, we spoke to a man who needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway. Dapper Dave, it's over to you.
Going live on your radio this morning is the star of This Morning and now best-selling writer. His autobiography, Life's What You Make It, is out now, and here to tell us more is a man that's gone from Gordon the Gopher to a morning telly sofa and everywhere in between. It's the legendary Philip Schofield.
Morning, thank you. Philip.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Not congratulations, because you wouldn't like that. It's well done, isn't it?
That's nice. Coming from you, I'm fine. That's lovely.
Thank you. Mate, this book is something else. I wasn't ready for it. I'm not sure. I'm not nervous about this conversation we're going to have, but I think, you know, I might go a lot more than you in it, because you're now practiced at talking about what you've written, I suppose.
Well, if I'm honest, I haven't done that many interviews. For this reason, it's getting better each time I do it. The audiobook was incredibly hard to read out loud. Parts of it were great fun, obviously. There's lots that's great fun. And I wanted it to be obviously a balance between... I knew what was coming at the end, but I wanted the other stories, all the stories that my mates have said, oh, my God, you have to write that down, you have to write that down. But yeah, that was tough.
I'm sure. I mean, it is laugh out loud funny. Some of it's so
good.
Funny. And I said on the air when we came on at 6:30, because I set the alarm for 2:00 this morning to carry on reading it, because I just wanted... I'm so glad I did, by the way. And I said, you know, it had me laughing and crying. It was laugh, cry, laugh, laugh, cry, laugh within 7 pages. It's that 7 minutes of that yo-yo of emotion. So what's it been like for you? I have no idea at all. Let's kick off with a funny. When you made that secret trip down to Cornwall to come out to your mum, you know, and she was next in your relay of coming out, people to come out to, and you bought some. You tell the story. You bought some fish and chips.
Well, I have an incredibly loyal and wonderful driver called Tony, who's been with me for years and years and years. And Tony scraped me up and knows all my mates, knows the ones that are going to lead me astray. And I knew I had to go down to Cornwall. I thought, there's no way that I'm going to be able to concentrate, knowing what I'm about to do. There's no way I can concentrate. So I'm going to need Tony to drive me down, which is extravagant in the extreme. But anyway, Tony drove me down to Cornwall. I said, stop off and get some fish and chips. And we always go to this place called Flanders in Newquay, which is my favourite fish and chip shop. And picked it up, went round to my mum. She knew I was coming and she knew something was up. And I went in, and she's got the most beautiful apartment, which overlooks Fistral Beach, which is my childhood wrapped up in a landscape, really. And so I sat down and we chatted, and we chatted. And I have floaters in my eyes, which drive me crazy. I don't talk about them very much. I've talked about them more, obviously, because they're mentioned in the book. And loads of people have come to me and said, oh, my God, me too. But this is not like the little bits that you see floating. This is like a filthy bathroom window drifting in front of my vision. And we're getting closer and closer to being able to find someone who can fix them. And they drive me mad. But they're not dangerous in any way. They just drive me mad, especially if they hover over an auto cue or something that I'm reading. And so I went down there. My mum knows about these. And we had our fish and chips. And I said, Mum, I have something to tell you. So she said, okay, all right, okay. I said, I'm gay. And she went, oh, thank God. And I looked at her and she said, I thought you were going blind.
So
and I thought, where does that... And I said, what the hell do you mean? Why do you think I'm going blind? She said, well, those things you've got in your eyes. And I know you've been very sad recently. I said, no, Mum, no, I'm not going blind. But the reaction from pretty much everyone in recent times before what we called the event, which is the event in the book as well. When I actually told everybody, they all to a man and woman went, oh, thank God, we thought you were seriously ill.
Martin Frizzell, your boss at this
I
morning,
know.
He said, oh, God, thank God, I thought you were dying.
Yeah.
And the viewers actually had similar thoughts because of the way you looked on screen.
The weight had dropped off me. Seriously, I just couldn't eat. I couldn't drink. I describe loops in there, of it just going round and round and round in your head, and it's so torturing. And so my, the relief of being able to tell people what it was that was actually silencing me in the makeup room, and I'm just sort of sitting there. We have such a brilliant atmosphere. There's such a, you've seen in there. I mean, it's such a great team, great fun, and we have a laugh every day. And then suddenly I was laughing slightly less, you know, and it was getting a bit more serious, and I was losing weight, and people would say what a wonderful weekend they'd had, and how was my weekend, and I would have just stared into the fire and talked to Steph. And these loops, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You have to come out. You have to come out. You can't come out. You can't. You have to, but you can't. What are the consequences? Yeah, but what are the consequences if you don't? So it was that sort of thing. It was weighing up. Could I live with this myself and the damage that it was doing to me, knowing the damage that if I didn't live with it just on my own and I did make it public, what it was going to do to my family? And that was the hardest thing of all.
But the closer knit the family, whether it's your work family or your family at home, the more people know when something's not right. And the people you work with at this morning, you've been with forever, haven't you? Yeah. More or less forever, in telly terms forever.
Yeah, it's about 18, 19 years now.
And they knew something was up, but they didn't know what.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of them sort of gently confronted you with, you know, in the 6 months prior to September the 7th, so February the 7th. What kind of things were they saying to you?
Well, it's just really Holly. I mean, Holly pulled me to one side, and this was, wow. I mean, we've been at TV Centre for a couple of years, and this was when we were at the South Bank. And so it was a little while ago. And she pulled me over to one side and said, "Are you okay?" So I said, yeah, I'm fine, I'm okay. Are you absolutely sure? So I said, no, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. And she said, well, you will tell me. You will talk to me, won't you? And I said, yeah, of course. And Gino, when we were in the studio, Gino De Campo, and he was cooking and we were in a commercial break and he was about to do something. And I didn't realise until Gino put his hand on my shoulder and said, are you okay? So I said, yes, I'm fine. He said, this is a 4-minute commercial break. For 3.5 minutes, you have been standing in the middle of the studio floor looking at your feet on your own. What's the matter? I said, no, I'm fine. Just, you know, sort of concentrating, just thinking. And he gave me the universal sign for call me, and I didn't, you know. So there were a few people who spotted it. I think the great thing for all of them was relief when they found out that I wasn't dying.
I know.
Or going blind.
Still time.
Yeah.
Well, one of them's definitely going to happen. But you felt like you were dying.
Yeah.
That's the difference, isn't it? There was a sort of psychological mortality that was within.
I just wasn't me anymore. I lost me.
Yeah.
And I still haven't found me. If I'm honest, and I've tried all the way through this to writing the book and in the few interviews that I'm doing, to be as honest as I possibly can be. And I don't know that I've necessarily found me yet. It's okay. I think it's okay for me to look. I have recently found myself finding it easier to laugh more. It's always funny with Holly. We always laugh anyway. But you know, it's just you think, oh no, that feels nice. It feels nice to laugh. That feels better. And so finding me is that's the goal for the moment.
Apart from the obvious, I thought the most candid pages of the book are the last couple where you talk about this. And they really surprised me. We'll go back to that later if you don't mind. Mm. But of course, this morning you have a team psychotherapist there anyway, don't you?
Yeah, we have a lady called Penny, and Penny, if you phone in to this morning and it is obviously whatever we do on the telly can't be resolved and there's something much more serious, and we can sometimes spot, hang on a second, there's something underlying here, stay on the line and we'll talk to you in a minute. And it's usually Penny, and Penny is an angel in human clothes. And Penny will talk to the people afterwards. And Penny's office is next door to my dressing room. And she walked out. She caught me one day. This was before the event. And she just stopped me and said, what's the matter? So I said, nothing. So she said, tell me what's the matter. So I said, no, nothing. Nothing is the matter. She said, every day I see you walk past my office door going from your dressing room to makeup. You've got your head down. She said, you're not you. What's the matter? And I said, there's nothing the matter. And I won't swear on your radio show. But she said, you're a lying. And we left it at that. And Penny was, on the day of the event, when I was in the studio, when my thumb pressed that button and posted what I posted, Penny was the sort of second or third port of call, her office, and she was in floods of tears. And she said, I just knew something was wrong. She said, now you can talk.
It is a fascinating tale. I remember when the last time I saw you before you just walked in now was when I came on the show last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't recognise you. Mm. You know, and it's you know, and Holly gave me a look, and I thought, you know, something's going on here. Mm. And you look like a little old man. Do you know what I mean? Because there was nothing of you at all, and so you literally couldn't eat, and you were conscious about your weight anyway because you just had a fat photo. You remember about a fat photo, didn't you?
Steph and I were walking. We went to the Hamptons. We had the most amazing holiday in the Hamptons. And we had a picture taken. We went with some friends and we had a picture taken walking down the beach. And I looked at it and thought, oh my God, yeah. You know, you are definitely getting more rotund now. Yeah. You have to do something about this. And this was ages ago. And so I went on the 5-2 diet, and the 5-2 diet worked amazingly well.
Too well.
So well. I shrunk my stomach, had halved my appetite, and it actually was really easy. Mm. And I maintained my weight at about 11 stone, 11 and a half.
Yeah.
And that was fine. And I dropped slightly below 11 and went into the 10s with the 5-2. And ITV phoned up my management and said, is he all right? So they said, yeah, he's looking a bit skinny on the telly. And Paul, who features a lot in the book, said, mate, I think you've probably gone a bit too far. So I said, okay, fine. So then I, you know, stayed at about 11, just over 11. And then I got down to, I saw the nines, 9-12, 9-11. And Steph was obviously desperately worried for me, and trying to make me eat. And it was frustrating, you know, everybody, because, you know, I just couldn't. It's not you know, not a case if I didn't want to. I just could. I could. It was the last thing on my mind. Mm. So I got very, very skinny.
Yeah, you did. And did you feel like, not only physically, but do you feel like, you know, did you feel like you almost began to disappear wholly?
Yeah. I think that would be a fair. A fair assumption that I think what I did, and I think what a lot of people do if they're in trouble for any sort of reasons in their head, is you disappear inside yourself. And that's when you're lost, when all you're doing is thinking about whatever it is that is on your mind. Yeah. And it can be work. I'm very conscious, you know, we speak now, we're, you know, broadcasting across the country. Look where we all are. Look where everyone is at the moment. Look at the things that everyone has to deal with and cope with. So I'm very aware of that. You know, sort of my issues are tiny issues compared to the issues that people have been thrown up this year for everyone. So I say that you have to talk. You know, even if you're not a talker, even if it's not something that you do, if you are in trouble, you can't do it on your own. And it will eat you up. And that was what saved me, was talking out loud. I mean, I there's a couple of stories about, you know, about sort of psychiatrists. I'll tell you in a second. So you have got to talk to somebody. Even if it's a mate, you have to trust someone with your burden, whatever that may be. And that's, in answer to your question, I just lost myself inside my head.
The traffic starts to flow the other way. The traffic of life stops emanating and starts coming in, and that's what pushes you down and gnarls you up.
Well, I thought, are you okay? And it was actually instigated by my office and the people who knew me, who knew that I was, you know, in serious trouble. You have to talk to someone. So I found a psychiatrist, and I thought, well, I'll go and see the psychiatrist. And that works for a lot of people. It didn't work for me because I couldn't do the hour, your hour's up, and then be cast out onto the street, having sobbed myself senseless, and then end up on the street waiting. You know, Tony's waiting to pick me up in the car. I thought, well, I can't get in the car with red eyes and wet face and blotchy, so I can't do that. So I just nicked round the corner, and I'm standing there when it was a sunny day. I've got my head up against the brick wall, and the sun is on my face, and I'm trying to sort of sort my eyes out and sort my face out. And a guy came up on a bike and pulled up and went, "Phil!" So I said, "Oh, hi." He said, "Oh, mate, you've got to come and see Kinky Boots. It's fantastic. I'm in it." Oh, and cycled off. "Oh, okay, yeah, will do." Oh, God. So I thought, no, this not necessarily for me. And another time I went round, had my hour, absolutely drained, drawn out, went round the corner, leant up against a gate. And you know those gates that go down into someone's basement outside? It opened, and I am feeling at the depths of despair. Oh, and I went back, grabbed the gate as the gate went, and swung round over this huge drop before I fell down into someone's basement. And actually, out on the street, it made me laugh out loud because it looked so ridiculous. And I thought, I'm not doing this anymore. And so I found a psychologist. And a psychologist has been much better for me.
It's funny though, isn't it? There was a sign, wasn't it? I know you're a big believer in the universe and all this kind of stuff. So the universe saying, "It's not for you.
Not for you.
You keep going there. Things like this are going to keep happening."
I've thrown the bloke at the bike at you, and now you've nearly gone into a basement. So it's not for you.
Guess what's coming next? Big bus. Big old red London bus. Good luck with that one. I think the best way to tell the story, and it's up to you, but I think the best way to continue to tell the story is to work backwards from the announcement. I just think that's an interesting way to go. And also it's a timeline that people can identify with. So the 7th of September was D-Day for the event. And the whole...
7th of February.
Sorry, I keep saying that. Sorry, 7th of February. I don't know why. And you call it the event. It's not a grandiose term. It's just a term that you all agreed you would use.
Well, because, it was a WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it was.
I had to call it something. Yeah. There were increasingly people who were in on the secret. This is not mates. This is office and management. And when you start to plan something. Yeah. So the only reason it's called the event is because that was what it was called on WhatsApp.
Yeah, it's not a new format.
No.
It sounds like it might be, but it could be.
I'm not pitching that one.
Who knows? Never say never, Phil.
I don't want to host that.
We're in show business, Philip, for heaven's sake. And so the event is going to take place on the 7th of Feb. Mm. And you decide just before the show you're going to drop or post an Instagram message, which was...
Essentially, my first words were, "You never know what's going on in someone's seemingly perfect life," and I sat down and wrote that. You know, I'd had it on my phone for, well, I wrote it, then I sent it on the event, because on the event there were lawyers and there were PR people and all of that sort of stuff who were brought in to manage it. And that's the worst thing about something like this, is the fact that it has to be sort of managed. And I hated that. And so that was, yes, that was approved. What you've written there is absolutely right. And then on the day, I went in on a Friday with because Holly and I had gone out for a long sort of, it wasn't a drink or lunch really. We were just it was a meeting where we had drinks, but we stayed very sober because, which is unlike us, because it was a serious serious subject. You know, what do I do? What am I going to do? How are we going to do this? And I said, I've thought about it a lot, and I think what I should do is that we'll do it on a Thursday morning, because we don't do Fridays. I said, we'll do it on a Thursday morning, and then I want you to interview me, and then I'll go, and you carry on, and we'll get, you know, sort of someone in to do the rest of the show. And she burst out laughing and said, "Are you joking?" So I said, "Well, what, I can't think of another." She said, "That's ridiculous. You honestly believe that you are going to do something like that and then get up and go without me?" She said, "We do this and we do it together and we leave together. So it has to be a Friday." And then we found the Friday that actually worked. Because Holly has been astonishing. Like, that made me cry. Literally. The best mate.
She's quite wise. She's wise beyond her years, Philip. It's not fair.
Yeah, that's true. She's serene. She's calming and sensible. And she's balanced, you know. And not just for me, but also for Steph. You know, she's been balanced across the board. When lockdown happened, we were obviously, as was everyone, you know, terrified. Are we coming off air? Are they shutting us down? And they put. I used to have a flat just around the corner from here, actually, and it was the house out in the country had the worst Wi-Fi possible, useless Wi-Fi, impossible to broadcast from there, and so they said, well, you've got your flat, why didn't we put a unit in the flat? And they put a full broadcast camera unit in all our houses in case we were taken off air, and it just sat there and sat there and sat there, and it was a lovely day when, you know, the bosses this morning said, you know, I think we can. We're not going to use these. We think we can take them out, and they're costing a fortune. But Holly and I we stayed together, and it was just us in the makeup room. And normally it's a big, buzzing team, and the, you know, Holly's got her team around her. It's like a Ferrari pit stop, and so it was just us, and we're doing our own makeup, and we're 2 meters apart, and we're watching the wheels fall off the world. And it was like a therapy session. You know, how are you today? I'm okay. I'm all right. Are you sure? You know, and just chatting things through. And that was, in a way, although we missed everyone, just us in that makeup room, I will really treasure that.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
And so you post the Instagram message, which you had on your phone for ages, because, you know, composing those messages, that's an intricate process, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, what words to write, you know, how often did that change, that
text? Not much, actually. From what I sat down one night, and I was sitting by the fire, those are the words that I thought sort of best summed up. I wrote two, because I wrote one that I was going to send at, I think, what was it, 9:45. And about 20 minutes before that, I had written one for all my friends who didn't know. And I sent that one first and said, this is what I'm about to do. And then the other one went afterwards.
So Holly reads it out. This is what you decided to do. Holly reads. She sits down, and the thing about Ruth, because Ruth and Eamon were hosting that day, and on the script, because it had to be secret, at the top of the running order was a 10-minute as yet unidentified news item. So everybody knew something was going on, but they didn't know what.
Well, no, because the funny thing is that you can have, with a show like this morning, regularly, we can leave a big gap for something, and you can start the show. And what we do at the beginning of the show, we've all sorted out 20 minutes before, and now, of course, you can it's much easier now, because you can just get people on Zoom. You know, now, then, before the days that we live in now, you had to get them into the studio. So it's a show that moves very fast. It's very live and limber and quick, which is amazing for a big, bulky 2.5 hours on the telly. And so it's not unusual to have a big gap at the beginning of the show. And so it was just said news item on the scripts.
But very few people knew that it was going to be you that was the news item.
Who knew? Well, Martin Frizzell, who's our incredible editor, Emma Gormley, who's the head of daytime, she knew. Kevin Ligo, who's the big boss, Kevin knew. The press department at ITV knew. My office obviously knew. The family, obviously, they were all in the mix as well. So there were, you know, there were a few people that knew what was going to happen, but no, very, very few people at work.
So
yeah.
Makeup, wardrobe?
David and Susie, my team, were there, but they didn't know why. And I asked them, I said, I'm in on Friday, can you come in?
What did they think?
Didn't know what it was. They thought I was resigning.
Did they?
Yeah, they thought I was quitting. And they thought I was poorly.
Cameras, sound?
No one knew.
Gallery?
Nope.
Wow.
No one knew.
Wow.
Until I posted the thing. You know, obviously, news travels very, very fast.
Yeah.
But when my thumb actually... And that was a moment writing that in the book was, it's just so vivid. You know, I was in the dressing room with Susie, who does my makeup, David, who does all my clothes, and Holly. And we're just sitting in this dressing room together because I couldn't use my normal dressing room because on a Friday, obviously, that becomes Eamon's dressing room. And we're all in the guest dressing room. And I said, right, okay, well, sort of this is it. And I had my phone in my hand and my thumbs just pressed, just hovering over send and thinking, when you do this, nothing is going to be the same again. This is going to change not just my life, but it's going to change everyone's life, all the lives of those around you, when you press send. And we just all looked at each other and I said, it has to go at 9:45. Because that gives everyone, well, and we also had a newspaper journalist who was being kept across the road in White City House, and they didn't know why, but they'd been told, because I'd said I'd do one newspaper interview, you might want to come down because there's something going to happen today. And obviously newspaper people will bite on that. So, yeah, of course. So they sent someone down. And then I press send, and here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Were you aware... when your thumb was hovering over the send button, that Instagram post would also save lives?
No. No. It was only after that I realised, because my head probably got very, very selfish. I thought a lot about me. I'm a lot about Steph and the girls and the family, but I will admit to, as we said earlier on, you get lost in your own head, in the darkness of your own head. And I got lost very much in the darkness of my own head and was, sort of quite selfish. So I didn't think about the consequences, the wider consequences. Yes, I was concerned for family. I was concerned for job. What is this going to do? How will people see me? Are they going to look at me differently? How are they going to react? Are people going to, whereas people would have been nice, are they going to be mean? What is it going to be like? What's the reaction going to be like? And only when I did it, when we were a day after, did I realise what it had become. And that made me feel so much better, knowing that I'd had a really, really rough time in the press, which is the way things happen. Sometimes it's your turn. It was tricky because it was inaccurate and very untrue. However, we're all held to account and there's nothing wrong with that. And so that on being given a very, very hard time, a sustained hard time, and having this major sexuality issue in my head as well, was what nearly pushed me over the edge. And one of the journalists who had given me a hard time, texted me. So obviously I had my number all the way through, but texted me and said, didn't text me to find out whether anything they were writing was true, but nevertheless texted me afterwards and said, what you've done has set our cause forward 10 years. And that was the first indication that I thought, that's interesting. I'd not really thought about that. And then it continued beyond that, much, much wider. And it continues today, actually last night. Somebody messaged me and said, you saved my life, and you made it okay.
When you talk about the edge, nearly pushed you over the edge, tell us about that. What edge are you specifically
just
talking about?
Just when you get to the point where you think, I don't know whether I want to be here anymore. And that was a frightening place to be. But... I think I was very, very lucky that I had Steph to grab my collar and haul me back. Not physically, but certainly mentally. When on the darkest nights, she sort of sat up with me and we just talked. Because, it did come in waves. And so I was lucky that I had that support. And that's why we ran Project 84 when we were on the South Bank. 84 men who take their lives every week. And we put statues. It was a most incredible art installation. Statues, life-size statues of men on the building, on the This Morning building and on the main tower as a representation. And these were, some of them were dressed in the clothes of the men who had, you know, taken their lives, and their families had gone into their wardrobes and put the clothes on. And those men hadn't found a way back, and they hadn't either spoken to anyone or had been saved. And I was lucky because I had, and I had Steph to talk to, and she did pull me back.
So you know this better than I do, but when we're talking about things like this, we have to sort of say to people listening, you know, if any of this is ringing true with you, then we're going to carry on talking about the subject for a while. What would your advice be now to anybody?
You have to, as I've said a number of times in our chat today, you have to talk to somebody. You have to reach out. If it's that bad, then you, the loving, wonderful arms of the Samaritans, and you may think, how could I ever, I can't ever do that, I couldn't ever do that. They are amazing. And so, you know, your head will consume you if you don't let off steam in one way or another, whether it is talking to one friend that you pick. You have to talk to your family. There is absolutely nothing wrong with showing weakness. It's not like that anymore. We're not expected, as men, we're not expected to be this anymore. You don't have to be that. You can show a weakness. That was always my thing, you know, in a sexuality thing, but in, you know, show no weakness type of thing. Someone would say something and you think, right, okay, well, we plough on through, thick skin, you would carry on, you know, show no weakness. But that's not true now. And there is nothing wrong with saying, actually, do you know what? I'm really struggling. I might be in trouble here. And so I would say, you know, and have said, you got to talk to someone. And you, if there isn't anyone in you, within your family or around you, that you think you can trust with whatever it is that you want to say, then ask for help. There are so many helplines. Calm are amazing. The Samaritans are incredible. And I say that a lot. You know, people who contact me and unload big time, there's only so much I can do. I'm not a trained psychologist. I'm not a trained therapist. I am untrained entirely. All I have is the training of life currently. But that's, you know, that's not, there is advice I will not dispense because it's just not safe because I'm not trained. But what I will always do, if I can't be kind and help people in the right direction, then I will always point them in the direction of those helplines.
So your mum made me laugh out loud. Sorry, we're going forwards now instead of backwards, but we are going to go backwards because it doesn't matter. We'll just go wherever we need to, whenever we need to.
I can't believe you're allowed to have this amount of time. Keep looking at the clock. This is amazing.
We've got as long as you have, Phil.
Don't you ever have to play any music?
Not when you're on. Not talking about this. Anybody can press a button. Well, actually, some people can't, which is incredible. But anyway, it's not that difficult. Look, there's several. One of the bits that made me cry going forwards is after, a couple of weeks after, and you're out and about and you're going out for the first few times in the real world again, and you pop to the shops and you buy something and you turn and this little old lady's coming in as you're trying to go out, and she says, oh, it's you. And she grabs you by the arm and you sharp intake of breath. What's she going to say? What did she say?
It had started, the event had happened the day before, and it was the first time I went out to the shops. It was the first time, because immediately after the telly moment, I went home with Tony and I was just at home with Steph and the girls. The next day was a Saturday. So I knew I had Dancing on Ice on the Sunday. And I went out to buy a card for someone. And it was the first time I'd gone out. And I walked into the shop and walked up to the counter, and it was suddenly like I was a different person. And I got to the counter and I bought the card and the lady looked at me and went, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah. Yep, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm fine." And she said, "Good. She's good because, you know, we worry about you." I said, "No, I'm fine. I'm fine." And I walked to the door of the shop, and that had taken me by surprise. You know, that had been a lovely act of kindness from someone I didn't know. And I got to the door of the shop, and a very elegant lady, sharply elegant, elderly lady, was in the doorway of the shop and grabbed my arm. And she said, "It's you." And I thought, oh, God, here we go. I said, "Yes." She said, "I can." She looked me right in the eye. And she said, "I cannot tell you what a difference you've made. What you did yesterday was so brave. You've saved so many lives. You've saved so many people. I'm so proud of you." In the doorway of a card shop.
So what happened in the next 5 or 10 minutes after that then? How did that make you feel?
Well, it made me feel, every moment is in like an analysis, you know, because I'm in the car and I'm analysing what just happened. Analysing, you know, it might be okay. This actually might be all right. To do this might be okay. It's not okay in some areas, you know. Steph is an injured party here. Obviously, but you know, the family, we love each other. We are together always. I said in the book, I say, you know, it's us four, you know, the same but different. And so yes, it's analysis. And I was after that moment in the card shop, I was just driving back home, and I thought, well, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Well, when you do the right thing, you know, the right things tend to happen, don't they?
Mm. This is weird. You see, the thing is that this, you and I, you know, we've done interviews backwards and forwards over the years, and we talk about telly, or we talk about radio, we talk about charity, all I ever do when I'm doing interviews is I will sell whatever show I'm doing next, you know, because that's my job and that's what I love. That's what I've always loved. And so all of my interviews have been, you know, about telly and about your job and about your shows. This, you know, for me to do this is so unthinkable that I would be this honest and this open. It's unthinkable for me to do this. I wouldn't ever have imagined that you and I and the country would be having this conversation.
But it's like a recovering addict, isn't it? It's like 12 steps, you know. Once you admit to yourself or recognize or whatever verb you want to use that you have an issue, you know, it's the beginning of the end of the issue and the beginning of the rest of your life. Mm. And with that comes, you know, not immediate lightness, but it certainly feels instantly a whole lot better.
It's not as dark. I wouldn't say it was necessarily we'd passed into some sort of lightness yet.
It's lighter.
It's lighter.
That's what I meant.
A lot lighter. And it is in no way as dark as it has been. So
well,
that's
well, you can
that's
breathe
good.
Again for a start.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, you're thinking about people say constantly, now you can live your best life, and it's like, well, actually, I thought I was actually living my best life.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what that means. And Charlie Mackesy who I admire so much, his illustrations are absolutely beautiful. I asked if he would do an illustration for my book, and he said yes, which I was thrilled with. And he asked for the book, and we sent him the, you know, sort of pages, because it wasn't actually, you know, a real thing by that stage. And he sent me back and used my words, and it's on the back cover of the book. I'm wearing new clothes, but they don't quite fit, and maybe I'll grow into them. And that's how I feel.
Well, as I say, that's from the last few pages of the book. I love the book, but the last few pages, they were so unexpected. How you talk about how you feel now, because it isn't redemption. You know, it isn't. It's relief, but it's not release. You know, it's not celebration. It's anything. It's so far away from celebration, but it's very, very good. It's a very good place for you to be compared to where you were.
So, I wouldn't want anyone to think that when they went out and they looked at on the bookshelves or whatever that, oh my God, this is a heavy tome. I mean, it's the last chapter, which is the where I had to go. Yeah, the last couple of chapters.
It's the last two.
But the rest of it, we've had a laugh.
No, I know. And we'll get onto that. And I promise you we will. Because, this is not, misery memoirs by any chance. But the last two are really significant because you say that, you say that at the beginning of chapter 14. I might as well read it because you're alluding to it now. You talk about the fact, here we are. This is why many of you may have bought the book. I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that. Hang on a second. I've got the text here. So here we are then. Maybe the only reason you're reading this is because you knew I had to get here eventually. I've seen this part of my story appear over the horizon and get closer and closer as I type. Now we are here. I have no idea how to start. Well, you did a blimmin' good job in the end, let me tell you. And as I say, we will talk about the rest of your life because your life is great. So, the thing about Philip's career is, again, with no real ins, no ins whatsoever. Look where he's got to, because he loves telly. He loved telly, still loves telly. And you've had a right laugh on the way. It's the best book about the business I've read, minus chapters 14 and 15. But we're not going to finish on 14 and 15 quite yet, if that's okay. All right. Because I think it's important. Okay. Well, it is, of course, it's massively important. So let's just play your reaction to when Holly read out your Instagram post on that 7th of Feb at just gone 10 o'clock. On ITV's This Morning on a Friday morning.
We sit here every day, and I'm over there, and some amazingly brave, incredible person is sitting here, and I'm listening to their story and thinking, oh my God, you're so brave, oh my God, you're so brave. And I'm thinking, I have to be that person.
Yeah.
I have to be that person. Because I think all you can be in your life is honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I was getting to the point where I knew I wasn't honest with myself. I was getting to the point where I didn't like myself very much because I wasn't being honest with myself.
Mm. So when did you know?
Oh, I think, as I said, in the book, there's no, no day. Life begins to trip you up. My head began to trip me up.
Well, that's the sense of it. But there must have been a moment. Sorry, I didn't mean there must have been. I would imagine there would have been a moment. A moment where you go, even if it wasn't definitive, it's like,
No, I think it was very gradual. And so there isn't a moment.
Can I put a pin in it then, in as much as when did you first, did you discuss it with someone that you might be gay, or did you with the first discussion, I presume it was with Steph, I have something to tell you, I am.
I think that conversation was sort of had at home. And when you realise that, something is in your head that you didn't know was there, and I've said, my psychologist said to me, human beings are remarkable in their, you think it's linear, you think you are linear as a person, and that's not the case. We do change. Suddenly you get older and you like foods that you didn't like before. I'll never like the white of an egg, but nevertheless, it can happen to some people. But we change. And I think I was happy to, no, someone certainly not happy, but it was better for me to understand that.
Right. So you gave it oxygen and immediately that felt a little bit better than it was the second before you gave this oxygen.
Just talking.
Yeah, just talking. And so then it comes to Christmas 2019, which I can't believe, having read your book, was only a few months ago. And this hadn't happened yet. And Christmas, it was the darkest time of all, wasn't it? It should have been the happiest time of all.
My mother-in-law, and I've written this in the book as well, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, John and Jill, they are amazing. My whole family, my God, the reaction from all of them was extraordinary. But just before Christmas, during Christmas, before I decided that everybody had to know and that it was actually going to trip me up properly, I was cleaning. I clean. When I'm stressed, I tidy up. So
what does that tell you?
Well, when Steph's cooking, when she'll be cooking and she'll get her stuff out to cook, and she'll go, where's the pan? It's in the dishwasher. No, I haven't used it yet. And I clear up stuff. And then if I'm really stressed, then that's it. The cupboards in our house are spotless. You know the cupboard that's got it's got bulbs and it's got batteries and it's got old candles and stuff in it. It is so neat because I just spent a whole weekend tidying that cupboard.
You're a hincher.
I am. And so I was cleaning a surface at Christmas and wiping it down. And Jill, my mother-in-law, my wonderful mother-in-law, said, "You are the perfect man, you know." And I thought, oh my God, I just said, "No, Jill, no, I'm not." But it was the sweetest thing to say. So, big support from them.
Big support. And, you know, that made me smile when her mum said that. Mm. When her dad said what he said in response to you coming out to him, that made me cry, like instantly. He said, "I may be your par-in-law, but think of me as your surrogate par. And long may it continue. Brief today, i.e. no problem." All very military. This is all very captain. That's a big load off my mind. As long as Steph's okay, we don't have a problem. Mm. That's cool.
Yeah, it was. And I call him Captain, the captain, because he, in his life, he has flown. And he's also been the captain on ships, on smaller ships, not massive ships, but smaller ships, boats, and boats, in fact, yachts. And so I call him the captain. There is a military precision to John, which is wonderful. And that's exactly what he said. Brief today, so all okay, nothing to worry about. As long as you're okay, Steph's okay, we're all fine.
Yeah. It's what you want, isn't it? It's so stoic.
Well, I couldn't have wanted anything else, really.
And then you texted back, "Thank you so much, Captain. I'm so deeply, deeply sorry to disappoint you." And then he replies, "Nothing to be sorry for here, son. So cheer up." And that would have helped, I would imagine.
Yep.
Of course it did. But it's still only Christmas, and we're still a month and a half away from the 7th of Feb, and also 3 months away from blooming COVID. Great, very funny line in the book, "When I came out, the world went in." Very nice, Mr. Schofield. You must have been happy with that one. You allude to, again, a lot of nudges that get you to where you needed to be in the end, thank God. But one of them, you read a paper from a gentleman who said that he came out, you know, in the later years of his life, as opposed to many other people, compared to many other people. And he said he didn't really have anything, but he had peace. Mm. And that was the key thing you read or heard.
Yeah, I mean, I started to do a lot of research because, you know, I didn't know of anybody like me who, A, was my age, B, had the life that I'd had, C, was relatively well known, you know, all of those sort of things. And I just started to do a lot of research. Has there been anyone like me? And so, I, you know, quite obviously, we're all unique. All our lives are unique, no matter what. And so, no, there wasn't anyone who was like me. But I did find a lot of stories from people who, you know, who had similar experiences. We had a lady on this morning who was, and funnily enough, this is before, you know, sort of anything had dawned in my head. And I remember Holly and I were talking about this the other day. And I think she was in her 80s. And she said, "I'm phoning up because I'm going to come out." And we went, "Oh, my God, really?" And she said, "Yes, this is it. This is it. I've now decided what I'm going to do. This is going to be my life." And we said, that's such a brave thing to do. And so when I'm searching through these papers and these, you know, stories from people, and it was a guy in America, and he, I think he'd been married, but I think he also might have been a you know, in America, a parson, and so a religious man, and he dropped his particular bombshell, and said that he was He'd found peace. He was alone, but he was peaceful. And I thought, well, that story doesn't work for me either, because I know I'm not alone. I know I'll never be alone, because I know I have the most incredible family. And Steph and I, you know, we'll always, always be, you know, linked together with love. But I thought, well, I like the fact that you found peace, and that would be a good thing to have. And when I was reading that, there was there was a storm raging in my head, and there are moments of peace now in my head, so that's okay. It's not like it was then, but when I read that, I thought, I like the sound of the fact that you found peace, but I don't like the sound of the fact that you've been on your own.
Yeah, but being on your own is having no one around you and outside of you, and peace is inside you, and I think that's the difference.
Well, I've been lonely in my own head.
We didn't have yourself, really, did you? I don't suppose.
No, lost myself. So, no, there was no one in there.
And we say this a lot on the show, you can't fix the mind with the mind.
Mm.
You know, that's the mind's, that's his favourite trick. Mm. That's what it likes to pull.
Mm.
So, I suppose we should go back to how it all started. So you're born in Oldham, you move to Cornwall, you end up on the telly, but via New Zealand. Mm. What a laugh. Phil, what an absolute giggle.
Well, work has been a laugh. I mean, work has offered me so many incredible opportunities and brilliant, you know, stories and moments. The times when I've pinched myself and thought, I cannot believe you are here. As a kid who grew up in Newquay in Cornwall, and when I decided that I wrote to all the DJs, I wrote to everyone, and God love them, they all wrote back, you know, in varying ways, and all offering advice. And then I got a job as a bookings clerk at Broadcasting House in London, and I was packing my stuff, and one of my mates down there said, why are you going? Why would you leave Cornwall? Everything you want is here. How could you not just be happy with what's here? And I thought, there is a lot here, but I just need something. I need something else. I want to. And I have this strange, you know, sort of love affair with TV and radio. In the early days, it was radio, and solely radio. Although that's not true, because I listened to the radio. Listened to the Radio 1 Roadshow came to Fistral Beach once a year, and I was there at 5 o'clock in the morning when they were setting it up, and so. That was obviously, that radio was fascinating, but at the same time, if I saw TV cameras, there's a TV camera, the white ones on the it's got BBC TV colour on it, and there are EMI 2001s. If I ever saw those cameras dancing across the floor of either Top of the Pops or
Tomorrow's World, Swap Shop,
James Burke did a science show. They were always in shot there, and I love them so much.
The Grand National.
I bought one. I've got
one. You know, I knew you would have done it. I was going to ask you that, but I thought my base had gone anyway.
I actually found a guy. Yeah. He gave me all the kit to make it work, but I'm terrified to ever do that, because I think it'll burn the house down. But it looks beautiful. There's a picture of it in the book, and it is the most stunning piece of kit.
They are gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, they're so ridiculously big.
It's massive.
That's why TV Centre was so big, just to fit the cameras in. That's all it was. That's why they've now made it smaller, and it still works. Fine. It's all completely fine.
Well, the ridiculous thing, and the actual twisting path of Television Centre and how that has played in my life.
Right, hold that thought. Okay, because I'm going to give you a break now.
Okay.
Okay, and we're going to pick up after the show, and we're going to chat again for the podcast, if that's all right.
Yeah, of course.
And that is a great trail. Because that is so cool. It's so cool. Your life is so cool. It's a real pleasure to know you, Philip Schofield. Thanks for being on the radio.
Pleasure.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you for downloading this special extra edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky. And if you haven't already, you can subscribe for free to get our best bits every week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.